So it's nice to be here in Munich, first time for me. See, you have many books downstairs, so that's very nice. Sometimes we have many books and they just sit there. But how many here have ever read the Bhagavad Gita? Raise your hand. Good. We should read this. This is the book, it's for everybody. It has no, sometimes it's called the Hindu Bible, but that's by, it's much beyond Hindu. The idea of Hindu is a very recent word. The Bhagavad Gita is, even in this universe, dated 100 million years or something. It was spoken by Krishna, and then it was spoken again 5,000 years ago, the version that we're familiar with, in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and recorded at that time, so now we have it in writing. 700 slokas that explain everything. Krishna says that Gyanam Teham Savigyanam Idam Bhaksyam Yasheshitaha Yad Gatva Neha Bhuyonyaj Gatavyam Avishishite. That's in chapter 7. He says, now I'll declare to you this knowledge, which is phenomenal and numinal. It describes both the mature world and the spiritual knowledge. And once you know this, there's nothing more to be known. So that's a very, you know, bold statement to say. But if you know Krishna, who is the origin of everything and the supreme controller of everything, then what more do we need to know? Right? That's the point. Of course, now when most, I don't know, in Germany, I know in America, most people that go to the university, they're studying business. Now the number one major that more people major in is accounting, because there's lots of jobs in accounting. And businesses need accountants to keep up with all the taxes and avoiding taxes. Keep track of everything. And many don't even have a department for philosophy or those kind of things. If they do, it's very small. Most people are just busy thinking that it, or, you know, computer science, so many people study. Because there's lots of jobs, you can get money. So that's all right, but if we neglect study of the soul, study of the supreme soul and our relationship with God, then life is, human life then is considered wasted. Shrama eva hi kevalam, Srimad Bhagavatam says, certainly only and nothing but a waste of time. We have to side by side. The Bhagavad Gita is only 700 verses. And it explains the material world. It explains the who is God and Krishna explains himself. What is the soul? The nature of the soul. And what is time? Time is a very important factor. Krishna says, time I am. We're all time bound. Very concerned about time, right? We all have a watch. And we're rushing here and there to be on time. Because the material energy, the elements, they exist, but in the beginning, nothing is happening because the time factor has not entered yet. And Krishna enters as this time factor, and then things start to come into being and change and grow and cease to exist in due course of time. Some things come and go very quickly, manifested and unmanifested, changing very quickly. Some things are very slowly, but ultimately everything is changing all the time due to the time factor. We can't stop that from working, but Krishna explains it. And karma, that's a word that we see many, many places now, all over the world. In Sanskrit it means action, work, but action means reaction, isn't it? Anybody had a junior high school physics class? We learned that, right? Newton, Sir Isaac Newton, the great scientist, so he noticed that for every action there's a, they say, equal and opposite reaction. So that karma, any action indicates reaction. Whatever we do, that will, something will happen as a result of whatever we do. Unless in the material world, then we can get very entangled. Or we can, you know, by doing things that are against Krishna, that are detrimental, that entangle us. So Krishna teaches then what is right action and what is bad action, what is spiritual action. So the best way is, we were just doing here, is the chanting the names of God. That is the basic, topmost spiritual activity which can liberate us from bondage in the material world. And that, in this day and age, is Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That is a specially empowered, easy to learn, only three words, Hare Krishna and Rama, six syllable things. So then the combination, anyone can learn in a very short time, even small children. Doesn't matter what our native language is, we can learn this. And that actually is Krishna. It's not just some ordinary sound. And there's no hard and fast rules. One does not have to be born in a Brahmin family or some high-class situation or educated in any way, rich or poor, young or old. Doesn't matter, it's a very sinful person even. If they take up this chanting, they'll be freed from their sinful reactions. And anyone can make spiritual advancement. So that's why we're always chanting and always trying to ask everyone else to chant or hear the chanting. We'd like to see everybody chanting. That would be very good. Although many people would be very disturbed. When I first went to the temple, always somebody would ask the question, what would happen if everybody became a Hare Krishna? They would think that would be like the end of the world. Because nobody would be drinking whiskey. So what about all the people that work in the whiskey business, right? That would be very bad, wouldn't it? They'd all be out of work, right? They think like that. And the people in the whiskey business especially, they'll try to stop the spread of, you know, this kind of knowledge. And many, many people work in the manufacturing and the bottling and the selling and the treating of alcoholism and, you know, a lot of work. But Krishna will provide for everybody. He's providing for everybody. That if everybody would get purified, then everybody could work and without getting all the reactions, all the bad reactions. And the people that are in the meat industry, they also think, well, you know, it would be horrible. Everybody would become a Hare Krishna. And then nobody would eat meat. And then what about all these restaurants? The But they could convert. People will eat, you know, devotees are eating, right? Vegetarian people eat also. But they're really crazy. In Indonesia, one of the devotee girls, she's from a Muslim family, the people told her that, you know, we have to kill cows because otherwise the cows will overrun the world. Or in Japan, you know, they give these animals that they keep in the, you know, that they're raising especially for that purpose, they give them so much antibiotics because they're living in very unclean, you know, conditions. The people were saying that if you don't eat meat, you won't get enough antibiotics and then you'll get sick. So this is a true story. So we want to, you know, educate people. We want to help the world and help ourselves. So we're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Can chant any time, any place, in any condition. You don't have to go to a particular place and face in a particular direction and sit in a particular posture and at a certain time and chant with perfect meter. We just have to chant any time and any place, and that will uplift the consciousness, just like we put this mark on. It's called Ordva Pondra. It uplifts, you know, go up thinking of Krishna, reminds us of Krishna. I could read it. Many, many statements, like people, they used to, you know, why do you put that on your face? Sometimes in America they say, what happened to the bird, you know, crap on you. Nowadays people have gotten used to it more, and also there's so much mixing of, you know, people from all different parts of the world living everywhere, so nobody really notices that we dress funny very much. When Srila Prabhupada was being interviewed once, the reporter was saying, you know, people, some people don't like this. They think it's the way you dress. Why do you dress like this? Prabhupada said, we want to, anything to attract attention, we want to do it. We want people to notice us. We want people to say, oh, there's a Hare Krishna. Because then they get purified. And this clay we use, if it's Gopi Chandan, that's very auspicious, comes from particular places in India. And there's a story that there was one very sinful king, very sinful, that he never did anything in his life, not one pious activity. He killed many brahmanas, he killed a pregnant woman, he killed many cows. You know, he did nothing pious. Finally, one of his ministers killed him in the forest. So he was brought to Yamaraj. And Yamaraj was asking his secretary, Chitragupta, about it. He said, we have no record. He had only sinful activities. He never did anything pious. So he was condemned to suffer in 8,400,000 different hellish conditions. So the first thing, they took him to Kumbhipaka hell and they threw him in the boiling oil, you know, like you cook. Yeah. And the oil became cool. Nothing happened. So they took him back to Yamaraj and said, what happened? And he was bewildered. How could this happen? So Narada Muni, you've heard of him, the sage Narada Muni, the original sage of the universe, the first one of the great sons of Lord Brahma, and he travels all over, you know, preaching Krishna consciousness. So he showed up there, and he said that where he fell off the horse when he died, someone had been, you know, putting on Gopi Chandan, and some had fallen on the ground, and he fell on top of it. So because of touching that at the time of death, he was freed from all sins. And Yamaraj said, oh, all right, called a Vaikuntha airplane and took him away. So it's a serious business. That's why we like to keep this on. And also, anyone that sees this mark on the face, they also get, like you can see, if you see me without this mark, it won't do you any good. You'll just think, is he an American? Where is he from? What kind of accent does he have? You know, it won't, no benefit to just see my face. Or, you know, you might think good looking or bad looking or something, you know, but no spiritual benefit whatsoever. But if you see this mark, then even if you don't know what it is, it'll remind you of Krishna, the soul, and then that will be great benefit. Actually, liberation. It's so much benefit. So we like to wear it because that way everyone who sees us, knowingly or unknowingly, if they know, they might say, oh, Hare Krishna. Then by saying that, that's very beneficial. So we like to wear it, that's why we dress like this. We don't say you have to all the time, but it's a great opportunity for those who are, you know, trying to make advancement, to see your own face in the mirror with this also. The cosmetic business is a huge business in the world, one of the biggest businesses. Now they're promoting cosmetics in Japan for very small children, and they have magazines for the 10, 12-year-old girls, you know, how to put all kinds of cosmetics, spend a lot of money, and men also putting on so much cosmetics. And so we are also putting, but this is a transcendental one, and it's very cheap. In Dwarka, it costs 10 rupees per kilo. Gopichanda and the real stuff. And that will last one person, I don't know how many years. Of course, you have to go to Dwarka. But that's also very auspicious, to go to Dwarka, where Krishna lived for many, many years. And the beautiful temple of Krishna is still there. Dwarkadish has been there for thousands of years, and so many other temples. And remnants of, you know, Krishna's Dwarka, where he, in his palace under the water now. There's a little bit left above the water, but nothing. One small island, and it was part of the original. But Krishna consciousness is, you know, like I just came, the airport is very, very crowded, everybody's going on holiday. But traveling is supposed to be for pilgrimage, to go to a holy place. Some people do that. I was just in Israel, so many people go there as a pilgrimage, you know, to see the holy land of Jesus, where Jesus was, and different, so many places are there that they mark as sacred places. So they go as this religious thing. And Muslims are going to Mecca in the countries where there's, like India, where there's, in Bombay, where there's so many Muslims, they make a whole separate terminal at the airport just for people going, you know. And they shave the head and they wear like this dress, the men just a dhoti wrapped around cloth, the women wear a simple, and they go, they for some kind of spiritual benefit. That's what traveling is supposed to be for. Not to just go to some faraway place, and it's sometimes inconceivable. And we went to one holiday place in Australia to distribute books, and just on the street was about only half a mile long. There was about 5 video rental shops. But the people are coming far, getting a hotel, and then renting all kinds of movies and sitting watching them. They could do that at home, right? What's the difference, you know? And the smoking the cigarette and drinking the beer, going to McDonald's, you know, the travel to, you know, Bali, Indonesia or something, to go to McDonald's and watch videos and buy the movies. Are very, DVD movies are only cost to $1. So people are madly buying movies, you know, that they at home would cost, you know, $20. But that that kind of traveling is just a disturbance in society, a disturbance for the person who does it. Everything is supposed to be meant to center around, you know, God consciousness. Human life is meant for this. Durlabha manava. It's very rare, human life. You can go in Germany, there, you know, how many trees are in Germany compared to people, right? So many trees, they fly over, you just see almost, or even Berlin, almost a tree. All around, so much forest. Not so many people. So many other living entities besides humans. But the humans are special because we can try to cultivate spiritual life. We can try to inquire, what am I doing here? And where am I going? You know, what happens after death? Why am I suffering? These are intelligent questions. You know, what am I supposed to, what is human life meant for? That means that one is really human. If one is just looking for where is the duty-free shop, right? They were going to make a law in it, you know, in all the airports there's a duty-free shop and on the airplane, that they couldn't sell cigarettes in the duty-free shop. So all the duty-free shops, they panicked. They said that we'll all be out of business. 75% of their sales, cigarettes. So you know, you want to travel just to be able to buy a bunch of cigarettes at a cheap price, buy the whiskey cheap. And you go to Singapore in the old terminal, still used, but as soon as you get your passport check, and when you walk out, straight ahead is a whiskey shop with no doors, you know, it's all wide open, and big signs, buy it now. Cheaper, so much cheaper than the city, you know, hurry up, don't miss your chance, you know, you're going to pay more if you wait. And if you're a little spaced out, you'll walk into that shop without even knowing it. You know, it doesn't say turn right here to go to the baggage claim. Everywhere it's like that. Israel is supposed to be, it's a religious country, right, you know. But you go up the escalator and when you're leaving, and a huge duty-free shop full of people buying whiskey and cigarettes. You know, they've come to the Holy Land, right, to buy whiskey and cigarettes. So people need education, so that we want to educate ourselves. Bhagavad Gita is not very difficult. And great, great benefit can be had. There's a book called the Gita Mahatmya, and in that book there's by Lord Shiva. Shiva's the greatest devotee of Krishna, actually, and his wife Parvati is always asking him questions about spiritual subject matter, and he's teaching her. So he describes the different chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, and if you read one chapter every day, if a pure person chants it, you know, so much amazing benefits. One, I don't remember which chapter it was, but they got one pure brahmana to chant because someone's father had gone to hell and he wanted to get him out or something. You know, the father was crying. He ended up getting everyone out from hell by the power of this pure person chanting one chapter of Bhagavad Gita every day. They told Yamaraj to let everyone out from hell. Another one was a very sinful couple, husband and wife. They were completely sinful in every way. So when they died, they became ghosts. They were suffering like anything. The ghostly existences, even though ghosts are sometimes very powerful, they're very miserable. Can't be happy. Suffering like anything. So after a long time, they were sitting under one tree, and the man, the husband said, we have to get out from this ghostly existence. We can't tolerate any longer. So the wife said, well, how can we do that? He said, we have to inquire about Brahman and Paramatma and the self and karma. So the wife, she wasn't very educated, but evidently, and this was a long time ago where Sanskrit was a spoken language. So she said, Kim tad brahma kim adhyatma, kim karma kim purushatam. So that happened to be the first two lines of chapter 8 of the Bhagavad Gita by accident. But she chanted it very purely and innocently without any offense. And immediately the big tree behind him broke open and a big demigod came out who'd been trapped in a ghostly existence inside the tree. And he was liberated by hearing that. And then they, Vaikunth, the airplane came for them. So that was just from the two lines. So normally Lord Shiva is saying you chant one chapter every day, but it says even one sloka, then even half the sloka, this would have, and even one line of Bhagavad Gita. If we just every day, of course it has to be done regularly and has to be done with faith and without ill motives and all those things, that there are conditions, just like chanting. If we chant Hare Krishna but offensively or without faith, just, you know, thinking, well, I have to do this, or this is my religion, I'm a Hindu, so we chant, that will be good, but we won't get the full benefit of Krishna prema, pure love for Krishna. But if we carry on chanting and we associate with devotees, we can get that faith. Faith is very important, but it's produced by association with devotees. The Bhagavad Gita is simple, and you can just open anywhere and find, you know, something unlimitedly valuable. And even if we just read one verse in the day before we go to school or work or whatever, that will influence the mind to be able to deal with the world in a much better way, much without getting, you know, because we can remember Krishna and understand that Krishna is behind everything. Whatever happens to us, we don't have very much control about what's going to happen to us, how the weather is going to be, what kind of people we're going to run into. You know, we don't have very little control over that. But we can have control over how we react to whatever happens to us, whatever, you know, stimuli we are faced with. When, if someone insults us, if we're Krishna conscious, we can take it. You know, if someone is a yogi, they can understand, okay, just the mature world. The next minute someone may praise us, right? It's no big deal. If the weather is really bad, that's the nature of the mature world. It's always changing. Endlessly mutable. Krishna describes all that. Like I just opened here, it says, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu Name Dvaishti Stinapriya Ye bhajanti tu mam bhakcha mai te te shu te mayam. So he says, I envy no one, and I'm not partial to anyone. I'm equal to everyone. That's Krishna. He's not favoring someone. He is ye tamam prabhajante tam sataiva bhajamyaham. He's giving us according to our desires. Everyone is getting what they want. However one approaches Krishna, he rewards us accordingly. The demons, like if you've read in Krishna book or something, they like to fight with Krishna. They want to kill Krishna. So he lets them fight, and they try to kill him. Sometimes he even lets them think that they're winning. And then he kills them. And then they're happy. and they get liberated, but that type of liberation is not so desirable. Just to merge, one can merge into the effulgence of Krishna or the body of Krishna, and then eventually come back into some kind of birth, but they can get that. But whoever approaches Krishna in devotion, he's a friend, and they're friends to Krishna, and he's a friend to them. So it's recommended to try to approach Krishna in a favorable way, offering something to Krishna. We all have something we can offer. Some people have a lot of money, and they can offer money to Krishna. Some people have a lot of intelligence, so they can study Bhagavad Gita, utilize their intelligence, and in this way worship Krishna. Some people are very strong. They can offer some kind of service. Whatever we have, we can offer. Everyone has something to offer to Krishna. And that's what it's all meant for. And ultimately we're meant to preach or tell people about Krishna. If we read Bhagavad Gita, we can tell other people about it. At least we can say, oh, I read the Bhagavad Gita, it's really interesting, I really liked it. You don't have to be a scholar, you don't have to know Sanskrit. We can say, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, I like it. Or at the temple they have really good food. Right? And I like it, and why don't you try it? You know, we can distribute prasadam. Somehow or other we can do something. So that is what Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, we have here. That is Krishna. 500 years ago, they came. Same Krishna, same Balaram. But they came not to kill any demons. They said, because in this day and age, if they had to kill the demons, they have to kill everyone. So it wouldn't be very good. Everyone is, if we're not a demon, we're being manipulated by the demons, and so many people believe, you know, they have to kill animals to live, right? That if they don't at least socially drink, you know, they won't have any friends. That if you don't smoke the cigarettes, you won't get the beautiful girls. You believe the advertising. So they came to give what is never given before by the other incarnations. They killed demons, but they didn't give Krishna prema, they didn't give this pure love of God. But Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, they gave this Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. They made it very easy, and that way killed the demoniac mentality. Many, many people who were living like demons in various ways, just by chanting, they've changed. Most of us, you know, all of them, I mean, most of us, very few of us were living a pure life, our whole life, and worshiping God and everything, and never sinful, and then we come to Krishna. Mostly, we are very sinful, doing all nonsense. I was in Johannesburg, South Africa. So when I came, one Mataji there, she said, there's one lady here, she wants to talk to you, she really wants to talk to you. I said, all right, I'll talk to her, you know, after the lecture. And I was thinking, oh, you know, maybe some big problem. Usually people come like that. So she came and she said, you know, I don't know what to do. I've been living for 5 years and just by selling drugs. And I started chanting, and I stopped everything. And without even trying, she just, somehow she was living with some devotees, and she just thought, well, you know, her life was miserable, and she just thought, I'll try chanting. And she started chanting, and she gave up all the drugs. She didn't, so she said, what should I do? I said, well, Krishna, you know, just pray to Krishna. He'll find you some other work. And she said, good, that's what I thought. So just like that, just in a few days, just from chanting a little bit, able to give up something, and very hard to give up easy money, and, you know, so-called happiness. And And Krishna is like that. So we want to chant, and this purifies the heart and creates and produces ecstasy. It doesn't cost anything to chant Hare Krishna. So many people are suspicious that something is free, but the price to get the full benefit of chanting Hare Krishna is high. We have to give up the false ego. We have to give up envy. We have to give up anger. To give up greed and lust. But automatically, if we keep chanting, those things will minimize. And then we become naturally, the soul is naturally blissful. And that natural blissful condition will be uncovered. And it works for everybody. It works for German. It works for Bhutanese. It works for African. It works for Americans. Chinese and all whatever so-called different people there are, they're all spirit souls, and by chanting, and no matter how sinful they are, what type of life they have, if they take to this chanting even once chanting the holy name, one can get so much benefit, so much bad karma can be removed. So we like to chant all the time and do everything we can to spread the chanting. Our movement is working, and by the grace of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, we're appearing all over the world in so many temples, so many homes, so many hearts, and more people are chanting, giving up the gross sinful activities. And the world is still going on, but people are becoming more happy. And if more and more people chant, then many of the so-called problems of the world that we minimize. This is a phenomenon we can describe. I don't know how, but I have one in some movie or we could show later somewhere that. In the country of Hungary, which was a communist country not so long ago, our movement has really spread like anything, and they made a beautiful movie showing all the different things that they've done, and it's quite phenomenal, right? Inspiration you can see, and all over the world, I think. In Poland, which isn't so far from here, 200 or 250 devotees tour and put on festivals almost 6 days a week with, 2,000 people coming with kirtan and prasadam and Indian shop and bar nayam dancing and like one thing after another, dramas about Krishna and it's just the smallest. In America they tour with the Rath Yatra, all back and forth across America all summer. They're starting a few weeks ago. They started in the beginning of June. They go until September, and putting up a huge festival once or twice a week. America traveling, it sometimes takes a few days to go between cities. If you have to go from Chicago to Los Angeles, it takes 3,000 miles, it takes a while. And they do that. They even crisscross back and forth a few times with trucks and buses. And even one devotee who was some kind of engineer, he built three Rath Yatra carts, big ones, with kind of aluminum or something. And they fold up. So he puts them all into one big truck, like we see on the highway. And if the temple doesn't have their own cart, they give him money. He drives anywhere, and in a half hour he pulls out the three carts, and they become huge carts, and they do the parade, they decorate them and everything. And then puts them back in the trunk and drives them. This is how Krishna utilizes the technology and everything. Everything can be utilized in Krishna's service. Almost everything. Even Prabhupada said once, and he would see in America when he went for a walk sometimes on the beach, these men that live only by drinking wine. You know, that's all they do. They just drink wine and then they beg people for money to buy more wine. That's their food. So their brains are not very good and their health is not very good. They're just looking for wine. So he said even them, even if they were thinking, because Krishna says, Rasoham apsakonteya, I'm the taste of water. Prabhupada said the taste of liquid. So even if they're drinking the wine, if they would think, oh, Krishna's made this taste so nice, then they will become saintly. He said, take a long time. Even that, just if they could just remember that. So we should also always think water. Krishna made this wonderful thing, the air. Krishna made it. Krishna is giving us. That's a devotee. You'll see Krishna everywhere. Prabhasmi Sasi Suraya. I'm the light of the sun and the moon, Krishna says. So we're seeing that. Everyone, people ask Prabhupada, have you seen God? He said, yes. Everyone has seen. But they don't know always. We've seen the light of the sun, we've seen the light of the moon. This morning when we were driving to the airport, the moon and the light were, they were both up, the sun and the moon. Lord Chaitanya Nityananda compared to the sun and the moon. To dissipate the darkness of this age of Kali, people are blind. They think they're the body, and they are spending so much energy to decorate the body. Practically, they have no idea that there's anything else. Prabhupada gave very simple examples, like if you have a bird in a cage, sometimes you see very beautiful bird cages. Right? You have those in Germany. In Asian countries, you know, people really are into their birds. In Hong Kong, you'll see, like here you see already walking the dog. They're walking the birds. You know. They have a nice cage and they take the birds out for a walk. And beautiful, beautiful cages. So Prabhupada gave the example that if you have that bird that's in the cage, and the person's just polishing the cage and putting jewelry on the cage and, you know, making the cage more and more beautiful, but he never feeds the bird, then the bird will die. He just forgets that he has a bird in the cage. He's so caught up in the cage. So that's how it is. With, you know, people forget. They're just so busy decorating their body, cosmetic, going to the, what do you call it here, the solarium, get suntan. Right? It's not so expensive here. In England, very expensive. And, you know, because the sun never shines there, so they can take advantage of the people. Here, you can get the real sun a lot, so they have to make it a little cheaper. But I'm sure it's very unhealthy. So they advertise in Australia, suntan is bliss. And the people love that. They have a lot of skin cancer there because people lie in the sun all day trying to get suntan. But those people condemn the aborigines of it, that are black by nature. Oh, look at them. You know, they're not even, you know, they can't believe they have any. In Africa, especially in the country of Ghana, everywhere is a signboard for lightener, skin light cream. Right? They want to make light skin, the light skin person wants to get dark skin. The black haired people in Japan want to make blonde hair, the blonde hair people, I don't know what they do. People are sitting here for, you know, torturing themselves to curl up their hairs. And in Africa there are so many advertisements also for the make it straight. They said, be natural, you know, make it straight. But by natural, it's not straight. So when they make it straight, it looks like glue on their hand. It doesn't look really very nice. It looks all right when they have the natural. But this is the Maya, very tricky. It's become such a big business, the surgery to change your body. People in America will give up everything, mortgage, won't even have a house. To $50,000 for surgery, trying to look beautiful. But how long will it last? They just forget the soul. Completely external. There's a new cigarette I saw all over Berlin. I don't know what you have here. The ad says a new box that is very comfortable to hold on to. Doesn't even mention what's inside the box. It's just because of this box, you should buy it. Because this box is a different color than the old box, and the corners are rounded off the box, so when you hold it, it feels comfortable. And I looked up one place, there was one sign here, over here. I looked this way, there were three or four of the same sign. They must have spent millions of euros just in Berlin, to put up, just to advertise the box. But it just shows where they're at. Only the external. The packaging is a huge business. You don't even know what inside, You buy this thing, the box is this big. And they have to make, beautiful box that attracts you. And sometimes what's inside, it's not very good. And they're just telling you to buy expensive clothes, decorate your body, go to the beauty shop. Of course, that's following the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam predicts that in this age that beauty will be considered by the hair. You'll judge beauty by hair, right? They call beauty shop in this country. What do you call it? Hair cutting. Beauty shop. Most countries. Go and purchase some beauty, by your hair. In Japan, it's so expensive, the haircut, the color, and then now they have makeup also. Hair and make, $200, $500, and then you come out, all worried that maybe you'll get sweaty or that, somebody will touch it. Can't sleep, because you'll smash your hair. And at night, because of the makeup, you have to get all kinds of stuff to take it off and put special chemicals to make your skin come back to life so you can put it on again. Madness. Just bodily consciousness. The worst thing is to think, I am this body. And one time in the ancient time, there was a drought for a long time. Didn't rain. So there was a shortage of food for many people. So one group of sages, all saintly people, different types of sages, they found some, they call them juju, some kind of berries. And so they were going to eat them, but before they sat down to pray and do something, like an offering of the fruits, and when they finished that, the fruits were gone. Somebody had stolen them. So they decided, to curse whoever stole. They didn't know who stole them. They thought it had to be one of their group. So the different sages were offering a curse, what they thought would be the worst thing. So some, one would say, whoever stole those things will never have family life. Another one said, whoever stole those things will always be poor, they'll never get money. And another one would say, different things that they're considered inauspicious. Narada Muni, who's a great sage of bhakti, he said, whoever stole those things will be in the bodily concept of life. They will think, I am this body. That's the worst suffering, the worst thing. But that's what everyone's thinking, and that's what's being promoted everywhere. You are that body. If you just decorate that body very nicely, you'll be very happy. and you get a very nice bed for it and a nice house to put the bed in, and, you know, all these things, then there'll be no problem. So work hard, you know, get a good education in something where you can make a lot of money, and then you can have all these things. But actually people become more and more miserable, and then we have so much mental illness in this day and age, because they're so thinking, I'm the body. What is the future of the body, right? Is it going to, actually somebody was saying how they, even Karmis calculated that, you know, children usually they want to be older. You know, once they can start thinking, well, I want to be bigger. Because they're always telling them, when you get big, you can do something that you can't do now when you're small, right? You're too small, you know, you got to grow. And so you want to grow up. And then there's a certain period there, like in the older teenage time, you know, they're pretty happy, pretty good, you know. Can do everything. You're young, full of energy, you recover quickly from, you know, different things. And then get a little bit older and they don't want to, you know, they want to be younger again. So there's only a few years in the life where they're actually happy with their body. You want to change it. Now you want to, you know, get a suntan, you want to get a haircut, you want to get a, you know, jewelry or fashion. And the fashion people are so expert to change the fashions, you know, every other day and, you know, make you always feel like you got to go for something new. Otherwise, you know, we won't have any friends, and it's expensive. So that the body is just going to get old, and then break down, and then ultimately will die. Some people don't get old; they just die young. The disease. No one is free from getting diseased. No matter how rich you are, if you're diseased, it's miserable. Even sometimes more miserable, you know. Even though you can get the best hospital and treatment, when they can't do anything for you, it's very frustrating, very miserable. And old age is, what is the only cure for old age is to die. And when you think you're the body, dying is a very fearful thing. So by chanting the holy name, we can get out from that. We can realize who we actually are. We're actually servants of Krishna. We're actually eternal, blissful spirit souls who are naturally very beautiful. Soul is beautiful. But we're covered over by this body. And but if we utilize this body, this mind, this lifetime for serving Krishna, then and we can serve very easily. Anyone can chant, right? Loudly, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And it's spreading all over the world. People, more and more people are understanding Krishna. All kinds of people want Krishna. And when they see devotees, they become happy. It may take a long time. Books are being distributed all over the world in huge numbers. And it's changing the world. Many, many people taking up religious principles. So chant, Prabhupada said, chant and be happy. Don't worry. If you're chanting and you die, you'll go back to Krishna immediately. We don't have to go to Yamaraj. And whatever we've done in the past doesn't matter. If we're chanting, we're most fortunate, and whatever happened to us in the past, whether it seemed good or bad, was good because it got us to the point of, you know, me coming to Krishna. We don't have to lament and be depressed about how we suffered in the past or how nobody liked us or how we had to be poor or anything. We should be happy that we've come to this point. So, we can stop. Any question? Yeah.
I have a question. You said that you spoke about our body and our temporary. Once you arrive at them, you learn about the demigods, right? And their bodies
Yeah.
Or they're not so close and not so conditioned. I was wondering because it's described, for example, in the demigods and the demons that are fighting each other, for example, the Valimaras and the fighting in this description, for example, the demigods, they get like pieces of the body get cutting off by
yeah.
or like bleeding or like get burned by certain weapons or like when you're up in the Kashyapu in the fight they were burned and falling away and they experience like things but seem to just positive experience in the gross body. You know, it's only kind of confusing me how a demigod with this type of body can experience this.
Yeah, well they know the demigods also suffer. It's just not as much. And they can recover also, like, you know, they've always got to some kind of magic thing to recover from all their wounds. Or it's the time for them to, you know, leave the demigod body as a temporary thing. One gets it for a certain period of time according to his pious activities on earth. And so it seems much better. They live, they're called Amara, it's practically no death, you know, they live so long, no disease, but they have anxiety because sometimes they see hell, and then they get worried that maybe they'll have to go there. But they don't get much opportunity because there's so much sense gratification, it's so nice, that they don't think, why would I need to, you know, do any spiritual life, make any tapasya or any austerity for God. Everything is so nice already. Like many people who feel that way. They have a pretty good life, they have money. Think, why do I have to, you know, worry? Everything's all right. Got a good doctor, plenty of hospitals, no problem. So Lord Brahma told the demigods, actually the best body is here on earth. The human body, although it seems inferior in so many ways. Lifespan is short, disease is prominent, the senses are limited, the quality of, you know, the food is very low, but it's still the best body because on the earth we have this chance to give up everything for Krishna and perform some bhakti yoga. But even like the Battle of Kurukshetra, their bodies were one, they could, you know, tolerate so many weapons and going right through them and everything, and somehow they just keep going. Different demigod bodies they recover. Or like the herbs that Hanuman brought, all the dead monkeys came back to life, even if their limbs were cut off, they came back on, all wounds were healed. And that was a big advantage. Not only did Lakshman come back to life, and Ravana, being a professional military man, every night had removed all the dead Rakshasas from the battlefield and thrown them in the ocean. So that, you know, because you do that, right, in war, they always say, yeah, we killed 7,000 of the enemy and we sustained small, you know, we lost 5 people. They just make reports like that to try to, and they try to drag all the dead bodies away so nobody knows. So when all the monkeys, they were monkeys, so they left all the dead monkeys laying around. So when the herbs came, all the monkeys came back to life, and the next day they had a huge majority. So in the demigod planets, they have those kind of herbs. Like at one time, the demons had that swimming pool made by Maya Donovan, they just throw the dead bodies in there and they come back better. They have the Mitru Sanjeevani mantra. They can bring back to life. So that's how they
can happen.
No, anything can happen, but it doesn't, it comes back. You know. You can think it happens, but they can repair it. These bodies, even now sometimes someone cuts off their arm, they can put it back and it works a little bit, right? If they can sew it back on fast enough, you know, they can get it back. But that's with very gross technology. But in the demigod body, it's much more subtle, and then they have, you know, facilities. Maybe it's something like those video games, you know, where you shoot and blow off their arms and legs, and then put another dollar in, they come back. And then people start thinking it, and they can go and shoot people, it doesn't matter. Right? Because they killed thousands of people in the video game and they just keep coming back. So they go into school in America and kill everybody. They just think it's part of the game. Of course, the soul can't be killed. But it doesn't give anyone the right to remove someone's body. That's up to Krishna. Okay? Yes?
Are there the weapons that cut the spirit?
Cannot cut the spirit.
No.
Krishna says can't be cut, can't be burned, can't be dried.
But how?
The soul.
How is Krishna killing a demon? Or?
It kills their body, so the soul can go out from that body and get a different. The soul is never killed. Mm-hmm. Just if the body is destroyed, then the soul gets another body. They'll think he's being killed if he identifies with the body.
What are the bodies of the demons made of? Is it light or
light? It depends on which demons, and you know, they're made out of the same elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether, but in different proportions. Some are more subtle. You know, like our body is, what, 80% water? But it doesn't seem like that. But if you ever see him trying to burn a body, then you'll see that how much water is coming out. It's very hard to burn a body because it's so much water. But that, like Lord Brahma's body is intelligence. Maybe it has some other elements, but the majority is intelligence. Different planets are different.
How could Krishna's body be described?
Spiritual.
Like a ghost can...
The ghost body is... The ghost body is mental.
Mental.
Mm-hmm. Subtle. But the soul is inside the body. But Krishna's is inside and outside, all the same. It's purely spiritual. And that's our natural condition. But our spiritual body is covered by the gross body because we're an illusion. And so by chanting, it revives the, you know, realization of who we are, and gradually we can also get out from these bodies. It's not painful for a devotee to leave this body and go back to God. Yes.
Will the individual suffer in a tree?
Yeah.
What?
Where?
Will the individual suffer in a tree?
Yeah. That's the question. Yeah. He's not so much aware of the suffering. But it's suffering. It's a punishment. The trees feel pain. The experiments have been done. One Indian scientist did that. You know, they hook up some kind of things and the plants, they feel pain. But it's not like a human feeling pain. It's not that. They even did experiments with plants. You know, they have someone shout at them, "I hate you," and they shrivel up, they turn away from it. And if someone talks very nicely to them, they react to that. Somebody did experiments with music. So he played different kinds of music. And he played loud rock and roll music, and the plants turned away. And he thought maybe it was because it was so loud, but he played loud, you know, more music that was more like, you know, religious music or something, and they liked it. So they do feel. That's why even if you are a vegetarian, there's some violence, pain to the living entity to collect the vegetables and fruits. So if one offers everything to Krishna, that nullifies that and the plant is benefited. But if you just take it for ourselves, then there's still a reaction for that. Then you have to, you know, Krishna understands. So if it's vegetarian, you know, you can offer to Krishna. It's not exactly the same, but Krishna is not, it's a personal, Krishna is a person, you know. It's not like it's just some impersonal rules and regulations. Krishna can understand the time and the circumstance and all the different factors. And so if someone's intention is, you know, that you can, this, that you can do that. Like some businessmen travel, you're on the airplane, you know, for 14 hours or something. Prabhupada said, you know, you can eat, but try to eat not grains cooked by carnies. Try to stick to vegetables, and salads, fruits, right? We should avoid the grains cooked by the karmas. That's what catches up the karma the most. And now, in these high-class hotels all over the world, they have a lot of vegetarian choice. Airplanes all have vegetarian. So it's not exactly prasadam, but Krishna, you know, considered Krishna as a person. So we just say, well, Krishna, I'm sorry, but this is the best I can do. You won't be implicated in any sinful reactions. Yeah.
What advice would you say in Munich, we can't see Krishna in the city?
You can't what?
We can't see Krishna is not in the city, for example, because there's many tamagun and tajagun. But you say, the sun is also Krishna.
Krishna is everywhere. Krishna is in everyone's heart. It's in the heart of the monkey. It's in the heart of the tree. It's in the heart of everybody. Krishna is everywhere. And, you know, we concentrate on preaching in the cities. So when the devotees are there, then Krishna is there in another way. It's manifested like directly. If you're chanting in the streets or something, then surely Krishna is manifesting in his personal form. But Krishna is everywhere. Krishna is in every atom. So whoever said that, not very advanced. Krishna, you know, like just running to the forest to try to find Krishna, you might not find him there either. And it depends on the, you know, like Lord Nishananda, when he traveled all over India, he said, I went to all the holy places and I never found Krishna. All I could find was the place. And then people told him, well, Krishna's gone to Navadvip now. He went to, you know, the Mayapur, so they should go there. So the pure devotee also might think, where is Krishna? Even the Goswamis were running around Vrindavan saying they couldn't find Krishna. That's another, that may be a very advanced devotee. You can't find Krishna anywhere. He's always thinking Krishna is hiding from him. But he is everywhere. So we look everywhere and find Krishna.
It's no different to go into the city or into the Krishna temple?
No, the temple is different. Because just like the government, say that you have a mayor of the city, so in one sense he's everywhere. But he's also in his house, and in his house it's different. Right? Krishna's everywhere, but in the temple it's different. They're special. My buddies say like that, well, Krishna's everywhere, so you don't have to go to the temple. Prabhupada said, well, if he's everywhere, why can't he be in the temple also? It's not like he's not in the temple, but the presence in the temple is different. The mayor, when he's in the office meeting people, officially, he's the same person, but when he's home with his family, it's different. So when Krishna's home with the devotees, it's different than when he's just in the heart of everyone, as a super soul, or he's present as a Brahma. So the devotee will see that Krishna is the light of the sun and the moon, but still, that's Krishna's delight, that Krishna's the Ishapanishad, then they say, Hiranmayena Patrena, you know, please remove this effulgence so that I can see you. You know, the effulgence. We don't see the sun, we just see the sunlight. You can't see the sun planet, too bright. So Krishna is also, you know, we want Krishna to reveal himself, and that's what he does in the temples. In the Bhagavad Gita is Krishna. So you can read the Bhagavad Gita in the city, you can read it in the country, it's Krishna. Some people may be able to perceive Krishna better in the countryside. Someone may perceive him better in the city. Science. So there's offenses in chanting. So if one does not try, you know, to avoid those offenses, then the offenses will begin to dominate. The weeds grow in the heart. Just like if you plant a garden, you just water it, but you never pull the weeds out, then the flowers won't grow properly. The weeds will grow. Right? Water also, the weeds grow faster and they're stronger, they can tolerate bad weather and everything better. So we have to protect, you know, we have to pull the weeds and protect the new plant and take care of it. So they, and then we're carrying a lot of baggage from the previous life, in this life, previous. And in previous to that, and if we take to the process properly, and we do everything, and then you know we can get free from that. Otherwise, that may burden us again, come back with a vengeance. If devotees take vows. And they're chanting, but they don't keep those vows, and they're purposely, you know, breaking regulative principles. They're not going to be very happy. Going to have a lot of problems. Maybe look worse than for the karmis that were doing that don't know any better. But that's why. So we have to, you know, you have to any process. If you take medicine, to take it properly, and sometimes there's restrictions on the diet or on your activities along with the medicine. So if you don't follow those, the medicine won't work. Might get more sick. Right? Like this, world's best-selling medicine called Tylenol. For headache, but if you drink whiskey while you're taking that, then you know people have like liver failure and die from it. So it says on the thing really small, you know, don't drink whiskey while you're taking it. Not everybody reads that, or some people think no problem. I'll do it anyway, and some people won't have such a severe reaction. So it's a chanting, and then. We course everyone should chant, but then we gradually have to learn how to chant properly. And also it takes time to clear away all this. If some are very much attached, and even though they're chanting, they're not really concentrating on it, they're just remembering all their, you know, past. And that's why we need to associate with devotees, we need to study, we need to do, keep busy and devotional, many, many things to make it work properly. To chant attentively. Is that all right? One time someone asked Prabhupada, what if a devotee thinks that karmis are happier than devotees? And what Prabhupada said? He said very quickly, he's not a devotee. To think that. But he may be looking like a devotee, maybe superficially chanting. Krishna is a person, and everything works, and as we're personal and understanding of doing everything for the pleasure of Krishna. Alright, was there a few more? What does Krishna say? Angel?
About the angel, the Christian angel.
In Vedic literature, like we understand, there's so many different types of living entities in the universe. That's one of them. There's, you know, people with wings that fly around. There's like demigods that are very good that can come and help people. All these different living entities are there. That need, they're all like some kind of humans, but there's 400,000 different kinds of human species. Demigods are made out of different, you know, who knows? There's all kinds of different demigods, depends on what planet they're from. Like in the sun, they have fire bodies, otherwise how can you live there? Water won't last very long in the sun, but the fire can enter fire, nothing happens. So their bodies are made out of pure fire. And then the moon, I think, is ether. And then others, maybe all mix up, you know. The ghost is in the body is mental, mind. So they're suffering like that because they have all desires and everything that they can't fulfill, can't enjoy the senses. There's so many different kinds of bodies, you know, and we don't know the details of all of them, that's for sure. But whatever body we have, we hope we can use it in Krishna's service. And the easy way to do that is to chant, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Like material mantras where it has to be exact meter and everything perfect or it won't work. But it should be, you know, like according to different accents people may pronounce a little different. But Krishna knows. But we don't want to go shing 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 shing. One devotee was chanting for us, where did you get that mantra? Shing 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 shing. You know, try to chant Krishna. So we say usually Krishna, but in Sanskrit it's Krishna. Probably we can't even say it exactly right, but Krishna knows. And Ram, you know, some Hindi they just say Ram, right? But Rama, the A is very short, so Hare Krishna. You know, kind of. But we try to pronounce it as best we can, clearly, so we can hear it and others can hear it. Not like in some Indian, especially in Bengal, when they sing kirtan, you know, it's Ra, Hare Krishna. You know, that you can't even know what they're chanting sometimes, because they make that so long. You know, it's like a contest. Prabhupada said that's not, his name is Krishna. You know, it's not, not Krishna. In some Bengalis they say Ramo, you know, I think Krishna, you know, now some of them may be chanting for money and all that, and then that's not going to be so beneficial. If they're actually chanting out, calling out for Krishna in the best that they can pronounce it, Krishna knows. The trees can see and they can hear and feel, because, you know, they turn towards the sun, so we know they can see, right? And they'll bend like anything sometimes to get in the sun. And they can hear because they respond to sounds. They don't have like very sensitive hearing. And they must feel it when you break off the branches. You're not supposed to, like, you know, pick the flowers at night and stuff when they're sleeping. Yeah, feeling.
Some days I can hear that the Lord in nature is chanting the Hare Krishna. At first I thought I had a hallucination. Plants and insects are also praying to God.
It's one way to see Krishna everywhere. In the spiritual world, they are actually praying to God. But everyone, every living entity, that's what they're really meant for. They're actually glorifying Krishna. If we see that, because Krishna's creation is so wonderful. Remembering Krishna so much is good. I just chanted, and like the echo is actually the chanting of the trees. If you, you know, if you're in the forest and you shout Krishna, you'll hear it come back. So that's actually the chanting of the trees. Krishna is one of the Das Avatars. Number 8, right? But see, the Hindu idea is that the avatars are all avatars of Vishnu, including Krishna. Because that's how Krishna comes into the world, through, it looks like that. But actually Krishna is the source of Vishnu. So he's not an avatar, really. He's avatari. He's the source of all the avatars. But in one sense, the avatar, because avatar means come down, so God comes down. But it's the same Krishna, but he manifests different moods and pastimes. And he doesn't manifest certain intimacies in Mathura and Dwarka that he does in Vrindavan. When he's in Dwarka, sometimes he manifests four arms, sometimes two arms. It's the same Krishna. But in different moods. Planet is a place that's described in the fifth canto, in the, you know, somewhere in the Bharat Varsha, one of the Varshas. That's where they worship. Prahlada is there, they're worshiping Lord Shrimati. But then, you know, he's Krishna, he's the incarnation, so wherever he is, that's a spiritual planet, a spiritual place. And they worship him. You know, although he may not be killing all the demons. But that's described in the fifth canto. You know, that's that place. And there's different varshas where they live. The different avatars. It doesn't necessarily say there's a Vaikuntha planet that's a loka, you know, for them, but they have their place. And it's a spiritual place. The temple is a spiritual place also. That's a, you know, if everybody's worshiping Krishna, for those who come to the temple and worship Krishna, that's a transcendental world there. It's not material. There's no demons, but there's an idea that there's demons sometimes. Sometimes they feel like they think there's demons because that's another mood and another, you know. Then they get fearful of the demon and they go loca even. The demons aren't there, but sometimes they think that there's a rumor that there's a demon. And then everybody thinks there's a demon. And it's a special, you know, understanding how Krishna lets the devotees experience. It's not like that the spiritual world, like the idea of heaven that they showed me, at least when I was a child, that, you know, someone sitting on a cloud with a harp all by themselves. And it doesn't really make you want to go there. You know? At least I didn't want to go there. It looked pretty boring. You know? But that's not, the spiritual world is very full of all kinds of unlimited, much more variety than here, much more loving exchanges and much more colors and much more tastes and much more. And Krishna came and showed it, so we get the desire to go there. Okay.
The next.
chanting, by doing, you know, hearing about Krishna more and more, and then we may not think of him directly at every second while we're doing certain activities that require a lot of concentration. But if we're offering everything to Krishna and chanting whenever we can, then that's how we do it. And then as we get more purified, we actually see Krishna in all the activities. Because you can't do anything without Krishna. You can't see, can't hear, can't smell, can't do anything. And nothing, everything is Krishna's energy. So gradually you can understand. But it is simply by practice, by chanting and chanting and chanting whenever you can. In many activities we could be chanting at the same time. Some devotees, you see, they're always chanting. You know, they're sweeping the floor, you know, doing some kind of work, cooking or something. And then they do it better in their head. Not like, you know, you can still do the work, you can do it better. But some things, you know, like require a lot of mental energy to do at that point. But the very, very advanced devotee would be able to still think of Krishna at the same time. Because he knows Krishna's doing everything. Pray to Krishna, let me do this. Okay? You can try. And you will. If you want to think of Krishna, he'll make sure that you think of him when it's necessary. If you're trying to think of Krishna your whole life, even if you never do, if you're trying to think of Krishna, you aren't thinking of him. And then at the time of death, Krishna will force himself into your consciousness. Alright? Okay.
The result is the same if I think on Jagannath or Chaitanya or Krishna?
One time when they first had Jagannath deity and someone asked Prabhupada, why does Jagannath look different than Krishna? Prabhupada said, oh, does he look different? When Lord Chaitanya saw Jagannath, he saw Gopal. And Lord Chaitanya is Krishna. Krishna is Lord Chaitanya. So that's why he comes in more different ways, so that we can be more attractive. Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha, he's Radha and Krishna, both. But if one thinks I'll only worship Lord Chaitanya, not Krishna, then that's no good. Or I'll only worship Krishna, not Lord Chaitanya, then that's no good. Both. They're the same. Alright? So now what's next? Samar Tika. Okay, in a few minutes. Who made this beautiful Hare Krishna mantra thing back there?
Huh?
It's beautiful. I was thinking we should have many things like this, different sizes, and market them. You know, the Muslims have beautiful things with the names of Allah and stuff, and everybody buys them and puts them in their house. And, you know, rather than just a poster, we need also many nice things like this, beautiful Maha Mantra, so that people are happy to hang it in their house and it looks like a work of art. And that way more and more people will chant. That's very good. I would like to see, instead of all these cigarette billboards, I'd like to see a few Hare Krishna billboards. I'd feel the comfort. You know, chant and be happy. Anything, just put the holy name up there. And people will see it, and they'll be chanting, and can purify the world. Instead of, you know, actually I just heard they were with Prabhupada one time, and some corner they came at had like many Coca-Cola signs. You know, like sometimes there's somehow there's many. Like I said, that one I looked at, and they were, everywhere I looked was the same cigarette ad, no matter which side of the road I looked. Well, I wish I could see Krishna everywhere. So Prabhupada said you should write to the Coca-Cola company and tell them that to change the name of their drink to Hare Krishna. And then they would be, everybody would be saying, enjoy Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna is the real thing. Always Hare Krishna. Right? So, I don't know if anybody wrote to them, but the message was that we should have signboards also, you know, that say that. We should do that. It's very effective. In Chicago, the airport is one of the biggest airports in the world, and it's called O'Hare Field. That's H-A-R-E, it's spelled. Some famous pilot was named O'Hare. So Prabhupada told the devotees, you should tell them to change the name to Oh Hare Krishna Airport. And one of the devotees actually went to the, you know, the boss of the airport and told him, my spiritual master said you should change the name of this airport to Oh Hare Krishna Airport. That would be great, huh? It was, you know, all the flights said Oh Hare Krishna instead of O'Hare. But they didn't do it. We want to do whatever we can to promote, you know, the holy name, let people see it, hear it. And that will purify the whole world the more people chant. We have beautiful art we can put up. We have so much nice Hare Krishna music, should be on the radio. But it takes promoters, and someone has to go. These bands, they go and they give it all to the radio. They have their friends call up and request it. It becomes popular, right? But they have promoters, they have people that do that. So we need to do all this. It's a Sankirtan movement. And Sukadeva Goswami told even Maharaj Brickett, I hope that you will take this Sankirtan movement seriously so that others will also. All right, I'm here for what, until Tuesday? So if you have more questions, I'm free to answer them. But yeah, I might have to research, but I just recently got my Prabhupada database thing working again, so I can look stuff up. And this movie about the hungry preaching is really amazing. So if you have a place after that. It's perfect. It's about a half hour. There's another one, Rathiatra in Durban, South Africa. It's quite amazing also. That's one of the biggest Rathiatra festival outside of India that we have. And even more people come than in Calcutta. Start chanting and get ready for the Lord to make his appearance. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Shri Shri Munich Bhaktivinoda ki jai.